If you're concerned about mental health or looking to get into self-improvement, join me at the Piece by Piece podcast. There, I'm interviewing everyday people and experts alike about how to overcome difficulties around mental health. Speaking of which, I just released an interview with a mental health historian and another with two friends who are healthcare workers.
If these conversations interest you, check us out at Piece by Piece. That's Piece with an A, B-I, and then Piece with an I. Thank you so much.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, my friends, and welcome back to another episode of Catch Up with Louise McSharry. I have to stop saying that, though, because maybe you're not coming back. Maybe you're here for the first time, in which case, welcome and thank you for joining me. I am delighted to be back with another episode and back indeed from my holidays. We had a lovely time. Definitely the most successful family holiday I've been on since I had kids. We went to Lake Garda. We stayed at a family campsite, but I mean, there were loads of people there who weren't with kids or whatever. It was just a campsite on Lake Garda called San Francesco, I think it was called Camping Village. So basically there was room for tents, there was room for camper vans, and then there were a little kind of glorified porta cabins that was what we stayed in, but they were perfect. Like, I mean, everything you could need. We spent the entire week outside, even on the rainy days. There was really only one proper rainy day, but we were under the shelter of our little veranda outside, and it was great. The kids played. Sam figured out how to swim with armbands, big achievement. And yeah, we had an absolutely lovely time, and it made me feel like there are lots of nice holidays in our future, which is nice, because when I think back to the first holiday that we went on with Sam, it was, I remember just being like, I'm never going to have a good holiday again, because you just don't know before the first one. You still have holidays in your head of like switching off, lying by the pool, reading books, and that did not happen. Like, our first holiday was an absolute disaster. Sam was the exact wrong age. Like, you know, he wasn't walking yet, but he was crawling everywhere. So you had to keep your eye on him the entire time. The pool was like a little bit too cold for him. He just wasn't really into it. We were both so disappointed that we could like barely look at each other. Yeah, it just did not go well. I'm not saying everyone's holiday with their baby goes like that, but that's how our first one went. And it's great to feel the tide turning and like we are going to have fun on holidays in future. In fact, we had so much fun that I'm trying to figure out if we could go on another family holiday this summer, which is truly remarkable, given where we came from. So this week's episode was recorded earlier in the week than it usually is because I'm actually away again. I don't know who I think I am with two kind of holidays in the space of 2 weeks. Well, actually, I do know who I am. I'm someone who got really excited last summer at the prospect of going to a gig with other people and bought Primavera tickets on a whim sitting in my back garden when it kind of felt like it was very, very far away. Anyway, I'm absolutely delighted to be going. And I will say, having an adult holiday after a family holiday, great idea. Would recommend it in terms of planning. But anyway, hopefully nothing seismic happens between now and Friday when it's released and when you guys are listening to it. If it does happen, just please forgive me. Everything will be back into its normal working order as of next week. We've got great stuff coming up. Going to be speaking to Ben Peachy about their book, The Book of Non-Binary Joy, later on. We've got all your latest updates in culture and entertainment. We will be talking about that Liam Payne interview, what is going on with him, and there's lots more as well. But let's kick off, as we always do, by recapping the news. Aoife Moore, political correspondent with the Irish Examiner, thank you for joining me once again. I missed you last week, and I'm sure everyone else did as well. And this week is slightly off because we're recording on a Tuesday. So just keep in mind, people, that we're recording this on Tuesday. So things may have changed between now and Friday. There may be a big story that we unfortunately don't get to talk about this week. And it's not out of neglect. It's just out of scheduling challenges.
Yeah.
But we'll be back to normal next week. A lot has happened, but I suppose the biggest story over the last couple of days has been the vote of confidence for Boris Johnson in the UK.
Yeah, so Boris loves to fight another day. There was a
this man. How does he do it?
Man. So there was a vote of confidence or no confidence in Boris Johnson last night. He won by 59%, which is actually less than what Theresa May won hers by when she had hers. Now, we know when even though Theresa May won hers, 6 months later, she was forced out of the job, and it is very much seen that that's probably what's going to happen to Boris Johnson as well. Mm. Now, Boris has said, you know, this is time to move on. You know, we've got things to do. There is concern now that because he is still very unsafe in the role, that he might dig his heels in when it comes to the Northern Ireland Protocol. Mm. We know that the Conservatives have been threatening for a long time to override an international treaty, which is the Northern Ireland Protocol. And because he wants to shore up his base now, because he is deeply unpopular, that he might, you know, start acting out. We know he's a very emotional, very irrational person generally. So that is a concern. I think the vote of no confidence had been simmering for a while. However, if anyone saw Boris Johnson and his wife, Carrie, attending the Platinum Jubilee over the weekend, the minute they exited the car, the sound of booing echoed all around London. Like, he was booed. I've never seen that happen to any prime minister in my lifetime. But I think it became very clear to Conservatives, and a lot of them were saying that they went home over the weekend. They were at different Platinum Jubilee parties, and a lot of them were told by voters, you know, I will never vote Conservative again whilst Boris Johnson is still the leader of the party. Mm. Because at the end of the day, he broke the law. And not only did he break the law, he broke the law when people were dying alone in hospitals and nursing homes. Yeah. And the Queen was attending, you know, her husband's funeral by herself that night, the night of Prince Philip's funeral. Yeah. They had a party in Downing Street.
Yeah.
So I think it is mind-blowing that he has managed to hang on, but think he will hang on much longer.
I saw, now I'm no expert in this realm, but I saw a tweet yesterday of someone saying that a lot of it came down to donors, that the donors, the people who back the Conservative Party financially, were all kind of still on side with Boris. And so therefore they had a lot of sway. And someone pointed out that that means that there's a few millionaires basically, or probably billionaires, who have like huge say in the way that British politics operates.
Yeah, it's becoming more and more like America. The other thing that plays to Boris Johnson is that he is a vote getter. Now, I think this says a lot more about the British people than it does about Boris Johnson. But he does win elections. This is the thing. He is weirdly popular. He wins every election he goes into. So that was a big part of it as well.
But will he now, I suppose, is the question.
I think severe damage has been done to this premiership. We are seeing very prominent Conservative MPs. It's not just backbenchers. Very prominent Conservative MPs saying that it's time to go. I mean, like, there's 200, he won it 211 to 148. Like, that's not a huge victory. And as I said, it's actually less than what Theresa May had, and she had to go anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we'll watch with interest.
Theresa May actually showed up last night to vote in a ball gown, which I loved.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be loath to give Theresa May anything, but yes, absolutely iconic moves.
And turning up to your enemy's funeral in a ball gown.
I love it. Okay, let's talk about waiting lists, because there was a piece this week about apparently a quarter of the population of Ireland is on a waiting list for some sort of health procedure.
Yeah, 1.3 million people are currently on a waiting list. That includes 200,000 people waiting for things like physiotherapy and speech and language therapy. Nearly 230,000 people are waiting for an x-ray.
Yeah.
Can you imagine the pain that you must be in if you're waiting for an x-ray?
Yeah.
There are over 100,000 children on waiting lists, and the waiting lists are now 30% higher than they were pre-pandemic.
Mm.
I mean, this is an ongoing issue. We get these figures every year, and every year nothing really seems to change.
Mm.
The other thing it's doing, and this is something that really concerns me, is that it is forcing people who don't necessarily have the money for private healthcare to go into private healthcare. I've even had it in my own family, you know, waiting on a chest x-ray that was never going to come. So when I ended up paying in the north, there's a private hospital in Ballycaily, paying to go to Ballycaily to get this very routine procedure because they couldn't wait any longer on a waiting list, and it's happening all over the country. And the thing is, the government has a plan called SlantiCare that was signed up to by every party in the Dáil, that they wanted to move away from this two-tier system and they wanted to deal with waiting lists. And it actually seems that they've gone backwards. We hope that, you know, COVID-19 and the pandemic would force, you know, bigger changes in healthcare, and it's just not. It's not working. You know, we've had over 14,000 non-urgent hospital appointments were cancelled in April. You know, like, it just seems to be ongoing staffing issues. We obviously linked to the pandemic as well as burnout among nurses and doctors.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is that you can understand some of it. Like, you can understand that, of course, things would be, you know, there would be a backlog from the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And you can understand that there would be major staffing issues off the back of the pandemic, as you say, both through, you know, COVID sickness and, you know, loss of life. Mm-hmm. And then also, you know, just burnout, as you say. But because it was a problem for so long before, and because SlantiCare is right there, it's so frustrating. Because, of course, every person on a waiting list, like, some people on a waiting list are waiting for something, and it's not a huge deal to wait for a little while. But for other people, you're talking about delayed cancer diagnosis. You're talking about children who will never progress as far as they might have if they had had an earlier intervention. Like, these are life-changing appointments in many cases.
Exactly. There's a person behind every single one of these statistics. And as you say, we were already on the back foot. We were already in a healthcare crisis before COVID-19 came along. Yeah. And we also know, and like me and you have also been through this, but it's not even so much people getting COVID, but you know yourself, like, I was sicker after I had COVID than I was when I had it. I got a chest infection after it, and we're seeing a lot of that as well. Whereas people who mightn't have been in hospital because of COVID now have to go to hospital because of the aftermath, and this would be hard to deal with if we weren't already in a healthcare crisis. And I would also point out that the Taoiseach has not been pictured publicly with the Minister for Health for over 2 years. So I think that tells you something about where Micheál Martin's at.
Yeah, and I would imagine a lot of people are in the same boat as him. Now, let's talk about creche fees. It's one of my favourite things to talk about. That's a lie. I hate talking about it, but I feel absolutely compelled to talk about it all the time because they are absolutely ludicrous.
I have some good news, though, to be fair. So we can talk about the bad news first. So we heard this week that Dublin parents are paying up to 60% more in creche fees than other parts of the country. I think most people would have assumed that anyway, but it doesn't really sweeten the pill anymore. Dunleary Rathdown is €244 a week per child. Come on, lads. And it's like, only
I'm not, that doesn't surprise me in the least.
Yeah, it's 152 per week in Curlow. Overall, across the capital, parents are paying on average around €220 to have their children in creche. Now, the front page of the Irish Examiner today, we have some good news. So the government have a plan. Parents will see monthly childcare costs cut by hundreds of euro under a new cost of living plan that have been drawn up for the budget. So Roger Gorman spoke to my colleague Elaine Lachlan and said that they were finalising proposals to significantly reduce creche fees. He said something like a €50 decrease wasn't going to be good enough. So they were going to do a serious reduction, because as we know, creche fees also, it affects everything else. It keeps women out of the workforce. Yeah. It keeps, there's a lot of issues related to it. We also know that the other issue with creche fees is that the people who work in creches also don't get paid
well
enough.
That's what I was going to say. You know, you've got the finances around creches are tough for everyone, because insurance, I know, is a big problem for the actual business owners. And the creche workers are not seeing any of the benefit of the high fees. So they're struggling too, and they work so hard and, in my experience, so well. And then you've got the parents who are struggling just to keep themselves on the road. Mm-hmm. So selfishly, I want to know when this is coming in, because I want to know if it will come in on time for me.
Yeah, so the It'll be budget 2023. They've said that like last year's budget had focused on funding for the providers, you know, that the creche providers could reduce their costs. But the introduction of a freeze in fees is due to come into force this autumn. And they're saying that that's just the first step in making childcare more affordable.
Okay.
So a freeze in fees and then a reduction in 2023.
Okay, well, look, you know, I don't know how much I'm going to benefit from this, guys, but I am happy for you, people who are listening, who are pregnant or who have tiny babies, because honestly, it absolutely cannot continue the way that it is. Okay, this is kind of an old story at this point, but we didn't get to talk about it because obviously we didn't do the news last week. And I just wanted to touch on the horrendous video that went around the internet last week of some men singing a horrible song about Michaela McAreevy.
Yeah, so for people who don't know, Michaela McAreevy was a 27-year-old Tyrone woman who was murdered, strangled to death on her honeymoon in a hotel room. She herself was a gifted GAA player, and her father, Mickey Hart, is probably one of the best-known GAA managers in the country. Her death, her murder, was a huge story at the time. She was killed in Mauritius. It was just absolutely heartbreaking. Last week, there was a clip of an Orange Hall in the greater Belfast area, and a number of men, I'm sure a lot of people have seen the video already. I'm getting like white with fury even talking about this, but a number of men were sitting in an Orange Hall and they were singing a song mocking the murderer of Michaela McAreevy.
And it's the vibe of, like, I've seen the video, I watched it yesterday in preparation for this, and like the vibe is very much like almost like Oktoberfest, like sitting at long tables with their pints and like football chants kind of vibe.
Apparently it was like a centenary of Northern Ireland kind of do. They were all sitting having pints. There's a lot of men in the video and they're singing. The worst of what this is, and it was pointed out by the Justice Minister Naomi Long in Northern Ireland, that not only did someone, you know, make up the lyrics to this song, everyone who was singing along, and there was a lot of them, knew the words.
Exactly.
So they've sang it.
It wasn't the
before.
First time, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's a horrific song, mocking the fact that she was murdered, mocking the fact that no one was arrested. Her surviving husband, John, who is now happily married himself, he married again, which is a nice end of the story, but he didn't publicly comment, but he did tweet and say that Michaela was a vessel of love, courage and dignity. Hate can hurt but never win, which I think is a very dignified response to something that horrific. There has been a number of PSNI interviews and people identified in the video. A number of them have lost their jobs. A number of them have been expelled from the Orange Order. There's been a huge political kind of uproar about it. You know, everyone from the UUP to Sinn Féin to Naomi Long, the Justice Minister of the Alliance Party, it has been roundly criticised. There is a police investigation. A file will go to the DPP. I'm not really sure under what charges, if any, they could be brought. But never fear, because the men now involved and identified in singing the video in the video have released a statement saying that they are worried that they are now subject to a witch hunt.
This is becoming, the statement said, this is becoming a public witch hunt inclusive of repeated death threats, and there is a growing social media mob who appear to have lost all grip on reality. And like, I mean, obviously death threats never okay, never. But you know, when you do something horrible like that and you're called out, I don't think that's a witch hunt. Like, you have actually done something terrible. Like, a witch hunt
is consequences for your very real actions.
Now, before I let you go, I just wanted to touch briefly on this because I thought it was interesting. Because Google have been sued successfully over defamatory YouTube videos in Australia, and this is kind of interesting about where we're going on the internet, isn't it?
It's the first of its kind, and I never even thought this could happen.
Me neither.
someone who is quite regularly defamed, I never thought I had the option to sue Google. Yeah, so an Australian court has ordered Google to pay a former politician just under €500,000 over two defamatory YouTube videos. So the former state deputy premier of New South Wales, John Barilio, there was two videos made by a comedian that were posted to YouTube a number of years ago. They were quite racist, abusive and defamatory. Mr. Barilio said that he basically left politics because of the videos. He said he won, basically. He won. He wrote to Google, asked them to remove the videos. They would not do it. When they wouldn't do it, he went to court. He said outside that you've either got to be courageous or stupid to take on Google, and maybe I was a bit of both. But he won. He said he was very emotional about it. It was a bit re-traumatizing for him. He said that he wouldn't have sued them had they taken him down in 2020 when he asked them, but they didn't. It was viewed tens of thousands of times. And it, actually, more interestingly, Google abandoned all defense of the suit when it came to court. And basically all they argued about was the amount of money that they would pay out. Now, this isn't just a Google thing. He actually sued the comedian who made the videos as well. He was paid around 60,000 euro by him. The videos were then edited. But, you know, this man had lost so much. Like, his these videos basically are credited for ruining this man's political career. He said that he, you know, left politics after it because they were so defamatory and abusive and traumatizing. So Australia has actually been this beacon of, you know, they are going to start going after social media companies as platforms. You know, the Irish Times or the Irish Examiner or whoever, we are held responsible if defamatory content is put on our website. So why are Google and YouTube and Facebook and Twitter held to a different standard? You are no longer just, you know, a message board. You are a publisher.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Australia has been very good on that. And I think we're going to see more of this now in the next couple of months.
Well, I hope so, to be honest, because we all know that there's an issue with that kind of behavior online, abusive, defamatory, and all the rest. Okay, well, Aoife, thank you so much. That's Aoife Moore, political correspondent from the Irish Examiner. I'll talk to you next week.
Thank you.
Now, Ben Peachy is a writer, speaker, diversity and inclusion consultant, fashion icon and LGBTQIA advocate, or at least that's how they describe themselves on their Instagram bio. And I am inclined to agree. Ben's first book, The Book of Non-Binary Joy, is out now. And I was delighted to have the opportunity to chat to them earlier this week. So I suppose, Ben, the first thing, maybe you could just introduce yourself for people who are listening who aren't familiar with you and the work that you do.
Yeah. So, hello, everyone. My name is Ben Peachy. My pronouns are they, them. I'm one of those really annoying digital multi-hyphenates. So I've got fingers in lots of pies. So I'm a writer, presenter, speaker. I've had my hat in the podcast arena. I've done bits and bobs all over the place. Essentially, if you've got something that I might like to do, I'll probably turn up and do it.
For a price, right?
I mean, there's always a fee. There's always a check involved. It's 2022.
Exactly.
Does anyone do anything for free these days?
Well, that's why I wanted to clarify. I wanted to be sure.
Absolutely.
No, I don't think anyone should be doing anything for free. So the reason that I asked you to come on the podcast is because you have a new book out. It's your first book. It's called The Book of Non-Binary Joy, Embracing the Power of You. And I was so delighted when I saw this because I think recently it has been a very difficult time to be trans or non-binary. All of the conversations are mired in toxicity, misconceptions, sometimes lies, and it's all quite dark, isn't it?
I think the UK especially is the center of what really is the trans issue. You know, we are really at a really interesting time because we have probably the most visibility that we've ever had as a community. Remember, like, in the UK, we represent maybe less than 1%. That's about 600,000 people. That's, like, maybe one of the teeniest, tiniest demographics out there. And yet there are so many column inches being talked about. You know, we're on the telly, but the big problem is, the missing link is that we're not in that conversation. We're being spoken about, we're not being spoken to.
Yeah.
And so, of course, misinformation is the currency of the day. And literally, if you put trans and then just press news on Google, you will probably get 25, 30 news articles from this week. And I could probably say that half of them will have misinformation, mistruths, probably have like someone from the government spouting some sort of rhetoric that is essentially making people scared. And if you look at the steps in history where leaders have tried to single out certain groups of people, we're on certain parts of that pathway already.
Yeah.
And that's really scary.
It's been really interesting from an Irish perspective, because we've had, you know, the Gender Recognition Act was passed in 2015 here, so people can, you know, self-identify. And we have, I mean, I'm not aware of any issues that we've had as a result of it. So I think when all of this started kicking off in the UK, we were all kind of like, whoa, like, what's the big deal? But it is a little bit scary lately, because you can see it feels like there's an attempt for that kind of nasty transphobia. Not that we don't have our own transphobia, of course we do, but that kind of organized transphobia kind of making its way, or trying to kind of permeate our society. And I think that so far we've been putting up a good resistance. But it is scary, because at the end of the day, as you say, you know, you're talking about a minority, like an extreme minority, but also a very vulnerable minority, right?
Yeah, very vulnerable. The thing is, most sort of like trans people you speak to will tell you that they probably are going through some mental health concerns right now, because being trans is really, really difficult. Remember, most of us grow up seeing no one like us, having no representation, definitely not in like adverts or TV, the stuff that kids find themselves in.
Sure.
We never had that. Mm-hmm. And, you end up being the first trans person you ever know. So you have to rewrite those rules yourself. So it is really scary. So if you're already in that mindset of like, is being me valid? Is being me okay? Because humans get scared of difference. That's totally fine. But then what if the first thing you see about a trans person publicly is lies, is hatred, is misinformation? And you're right, this organized transphobia, the business of transphobia, you know, looking into organizations like the so-called LGB Alliance, they are making inroads and they are being listened to by people in power. You know, I was looking at a Twitter thread yesterday. God knows why I'm on Twitter. It's the worst place in the world.
I know, right? I still have the same conversation with myself every day.
Awful. But it's worth it for the memes. Trust me, it is. You know, so there was this argument that's been bubbling around for a long time that people of a certain age should not be allowed to transition. It should come to, you know, young adulthood, 16, 18. Mm. That we've heard for a long time, when really, if someone transitions much younger, it's so much easier. It's so much safer for the body. It makes it so much easier for them.
Mm.
And so that was an argument we've heard for a very long time. And now I've started to see those kind of threads with no one should ever be allowed to transition ever. And that's now the conversation. And if you didn't think that was going to happen, why are we surprised? And when you look at the LGB Alliance, that, you know, if you go on their website, it's a truly horrific experience. I've been there for research to understand, you know, you need to understand what someone's talking about in order to be like, how do we counter this? How do we work with this? And originally it was very much around sort of this hysteria towards trans people trying to eradicate our existence. But now they're renegading and they're trying to change the rights of gay people. They're trying to change the rights of bisexual people. And I don't think anyone was surprised, but also like no one saw it coming. But also that was going to be the plan all along.
Yeah.
So really, when trans rights go, the rights of everyone else are going to start to be erased.
Yeah, they won't stop there. Yeah. And I thought, I don't want to spend it like, because I didn't want to have one of these conversations, but I just, one thing before we move on, I did see the other day, one of the kind of, you know, one of the big voices in the, I suppose, TERF community was someone had found their speaking fee and how much they get paid to speak. And it was like 20 grand an engagement. And the person who was tweeting it was pointing out that it's big business, you know, at this stage to be one of these people. And that can't be ignored either. You know, there are definitely benefits, you know, to being right wing in any capacity. And this is not an exception.
No, not at all. The thing is as well, because, you know, in UK, freedom of speech is protected. It's, you know, and if you look towards the Equality Act, those laws are put in place to protect certain characteristics. It also protects those that have different opinions. It also protects those that are kind of behind transphobia. And so, yeah, there is money to be made. And what's scary, if you looked at like the speaking rates of some really big trans people in the UK, I don't think any of us would be getting any of that, nowhere near 20 grand.
Yeah.
So, you know, TERF, it's the business because, you know, certain media outlets in the sort of like being nonpartisan, being open, they can platform this.
Yeah. And they can call it balance.
Yeah. And until that stops causing loads and loads of comments, loads and loads of engagement, essentially money, until that stops making money, the newspapers and TV are not going to stop. Yeah, because it's business.
Yeah, that's it. Anyway, as I said, the whole reason that I wanted to talk to you is because your book is called The Book of Non-Binary Joy.
Yes.
And I just love that because, you know, we don't hear enough about non-binary joy, you know, because so often, you know, any mention of non-binary people is in the mire of all of this darkness. So tell me about the book and kind of what made you think, no, I have to do this.
So the book came from that landscape. You know, I was proposing this in 2020, and it was when we thought it was at that climax of like, this can't get any worse.
Right.
And the sad thing is, any non-binary person, any trans person, we know how terrible it is. We know how bad that situation is. You don't need another resource telling you about that.
No.
You know, that really is a conversation for allies. It's a conversation for those outside of the community. That's not something I think anyone needs to be publishing at the minute. If you know, unless there's something nuanced that you bring to the debate, like Sean Fay's incredible book, The Trans Issue, that was a step forward.
Sure.
But apart from that, we don't need to. So I was like, I want to create a resource for non-binary people because I've not seen it. I just haven't seen anything like that.
Yeah.
And you know what? I want to create it. You know, like so much of the stuff we consume, TV programs, music, podcasts, they're a distraction from the hellfire that is this world. Mm. No one's lying about that fact. No one's saying that it's not existing. We're just saying you could also do with some respite.
Yeah.
You could also do with a break.
Yeah.
And so this silly little pink book has pages filled with happiness, love, affirmation, validity, that, you know, those kind of comments do exist on the internet, and you probably could find some of the stuff in those gorgeous like pastel graphics.
Yeah.
But you don't need to go on the internet to find this here. It's all in one place. It's written with love, respect. And also the brilliant thing is, I think trans and non-binary people, we really understand our intersection. And I understand that my voice is not the only voice you need to hear from. And it's not the only experience because, you know, if you speak to like another non-binary person, their experience is going to be so different to mine. And so I brought a lot of voices into the book. I wanted the people that read to take from more than just me. And really, it's a passion project and a love letter to the non-binary community. Everything I wish I hadn't had to learn on my own, everything I wish that someone had stopped and told me.
Mm.
You know, I think I've really realized in my journey with this book, my journey with, you know, working in the activist landscape, is that I think to begin with, I thought this was for me. I thought it was to help me to make my life easier. I can't undo the awful stuff I've been through. I can't change that. You know, I've spent hours with my therapist, and I think it's just sunk in that that's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
So now my job, my responsibility, my reason that I breathe is to make it better for the next generation.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
As hard as my life has been, plonk me 30 years ago, it would have been 10 times worse.
Yeah.
And there were people then that fought for what I have now.
Yeah.
So now this is my job, you know, like I'm paying it forward. Think about like you're in the queue at Starbucks and you buy the person behind you coffee. That's what I'm doing. That's what this silly little pink book is.
Yeah, I totally get it. And I know you're kind of being facetious when you call it a silly little pink book, but I don't think there's anything silly about it because I think you're right. Like, you know, the idea of being non-binary is still something that lots of people are being introduced to and that lots of people, you know, have never even, there will still be lots of people who've never even heard of, you know, the term non-binary. And so for people who are non-binary, but who have never even heard the term non-binary, there's so much discovery, I can imagine, and exploration that needs to happen. So to have a resource is really, I think, vital. But what advice would you give to someone who is kind of just saying, hey, maybe that's me?
It's a really interesting place to be because it's such an important, valid question. And, you know, like, it's not just a question that trans and non-binary people have, but it's something that we're a little bit more aware of because perhaps we don't have a frame of reference around us that allows us to plonk our life onto a template. So when you don't have that, it's like, where do I go?
Yeah.
The difficult thing about having those questions is you might be surrounded by people, you know, that might not be supportive of those, you know, different approaches to life. You know, yeah. I would call it non-traditional. I'd put traditional in like inverted commas. It's not important, but it is important to understand that there is a difference there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really hard when, you know, you're scared about how, you know, maybe the grown-ups around you, if you're looking from a younger person, or if you're coming at it from like perhaps like a midlife, you know, conversation. I was speaking to someone who's married with kids. How do you have that conversation?
Yeah.
Because that changes the whole landscape of your life, the landscape of your relationship.
Yeah.
So it's about finding safe spaces where you can learn in your own time, because sometimes I think as humans, because we rely on stereotypes, because we are essentially lazy, time-laden beasts, we're like, how do I understand someone really, really quickly? How do I do it? How do I do it? So you stereotypes, you just fill in all the boxes in our head. It's so easy to do. And I know why we do it, and it's helpful. So humans want an answer super, super quick, but it might take you 6 years to work out who you are.
Yeah.
It's taken me all of my 20s. I'm nearly 28 and I'm still not done learning, right?
Yeah.
And I started this journey when I was 20, 21. And so you need to find those resources that are there for you. And I'm not just saying it could be my book. It could be, you know, it could be those infographics on Instagram. It could be podcasts. It could be documentaries. I think, you know, there's also that wider conversation. You know, you'll hear that conversation over Pride about people's coming out stories.
Mm.
They want, you know, they want that one clear narrative of how it happened, what you did, and how you moved on.
Mm.
But, you know, for trans and non-binary people, every new person we meet, we have to come out to.
Mm.
We have to explain who we are and the parameters of our identity.
Mm.
It's every day for us.
Yeah.
And so I would say, don't rush it. Take some time for you and find the resources that speak to you.
Mm.
And also be prepared to find answers that don't feel right, or, you know, answers that you're like, that's really scary. Right now, that's a no for me. But in like 12 months time, you're like, actually, this isn't so scary. I think the brilliant thing is that you can take as much time as you want.
Yeah.
It's just, there might be people in your life that aren't going to be ready to go on that journey with you.
Yeah.
And I wish that wasn't the case. So find the people that are there for you. And that might not be family. That might be chosen family.
Yeah. And also, you know, there are good organizations in Ireland. If you're someone who's thinking about this, Tenny, the Transgender Equality Network of Ireland is a good place to start. Tenny.ie. Or if you're a young person, Belong To are spectacular when it comes to, you know, anything that comes under the LGBTQIA plus umbrella. So they're at belongto.org and Tenny is at Tenny.ie, T-E-N-I. And I'll stick those in the show notes as well in case you want to get in touch with them. Before I let you go, Ben, I just wanted to ask you a question. And that question is, what do you love about being non-binary?
The thing I love the most about being non-binary is that there are no rules. I think I, for the longest time, thought I had to fit into a set of guidelines, a set of rules. And that's really scary. It's really rigid when you don't fit. It's like shoving a circle into a square. It's just not going to happen. And the, you know,
oh my God, like Hillary Duff.
Yeah, absolutely. Hillary.
Sorry, I've been watching, are you aware of, you know, Whitney Port from The Hills?
Yes.
So she and her husband have a YouTube channel where they watch the old shows like The City and The Hills together and talk about, I cannot recommend it enough, but at the moment I'm watching them rewatch Laguna Beach. So Hilary Duff is a big part of my life right now. So sorry for like sidetracking on your brilliant answer, but you're right. I get it. There's, you know, you don't have to live within the parameters of any kind of preconceived notion.
No, like anything I want to explore, try, do, experience, I just say yes. And I started saying yes 7 years ago and I've never stopped. And it's the best thing I've ever done. Sure, it's been hard. Sure, it's been tough. Yes, people on the internet hate me sometimes. But at my core, I have more joy than I have ever had. And it is beautiful.
Ben Peachy, thank you so much. If people want to find the Book of Non-Binary Joy, Embracing the Power of You, it's available across the internet. Easy to find. There's lots of Irish bookshops selling it. Ben, have a lovely one. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Now it is time to talk culture and entertainment news. And this week we had lots to catch up on, as always, including the Liam Payne interview that got everyone talking about him, and maybe not in the best way. Also, why SJP is still talking about Kim Cattrall and whether she should maybe give it up at this stage. And lots more besides. So let's get into it. Jen Gannon, thank you so much for being with me. You are a journalist, pop culture aficionado, and this year, Love Island correspondent for Ireland AM.
Dun, dun, dun. It's happening. Whether you like it or not, I will be on your screens saying things about people in their nearly nudes.
Well, we will talk about Love Island because obviously it just launched. But first, obviously, we didn't get to do one of these kind of sessions last week on the episode, and I can't not talk about Liam Payne.
Oh my
so
God.
We simply have to. Why?
Everything I have learned about Liam Payne has been against my will. Like, what is going on with Liam Payne? From him doing that weird Dutch-Australian hybrid accent when he was talking about Will Smith, which was unbelievable after the Oscars. Although Harry is now talking in a weird accent too, Harry Styles.
See, okay, I have a position on the accent thing. I think that people's accents change if they live in different countries. Like, that just happens. And, you know, obviously I'm sensitive to this because I have a mangled accent from living in various countries. So I don't have an issue with that. But, like, it's almost like the rhythm of the way he's speaking as well. And, like, and obviously what he's saying.
Well, what he's saying is very important. So it's not One Direction specific, but he is back in the public consciousness because he did an interview with Logan Paul, which sounds like my idea of hell. And I'm a professional, so I had to listen to this. And it was extremely lads, 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 like a gang of lads trying to outdo each other and impress each other. It's all like bravado, talking like very hyper masculine.
Yeah.
Like whiskey drinking, talking about gains, you know, doing martial arts, taking your top off, all that kind of ridiculousness. And he is somewhere between a football pundit and David Brent. Like, he seems to have zero self-awareness, which is great for us because it's so entertaining. But he has, during this interview, reshaped, like, the whole story of One Direction to be around himself. He centered himself. He is the main character. So he was saying he was the main focus of the band, that he was the face that Simon Cowell shaped the rest of One Direction together, like around them, and that he was the main singer, which Lizzo, excuse me, already today came out and said, I think you'll find there was no main singer. And if there was one, it definitely wasn't you, Liam.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that we're all aware of that, though. I never would have assumed that he was the front man of One Direction.
Certainly not. And, like, you know, what he said, like, you know, Simon Cowell built the band around me. And
my face.
I was going to have the big solo career. Like, like, babe, no.
And then he was saying, oh, I wasn't. He was doing this, like, false, weirdly for one part of the interview, he was doing this kind of false modesty thing. And I don't know if I wanted to be a solo artist. And then, but Ed Sheeran happened to write me a song, so I had to, I was back in the game. And then he said, you know, he had the biggest solo single of all the guys, the rest of the lads put together. And I don't know where he was getting that information from, because it's very dubious. And what we know about hardcore One Direction fans is they are going to look into every detail of this.
Microscopically.
And yes. Yeah. And they got the receipts and they were like, actually, you didn't, Liam. So I don't know. He has these stories and he kept on saying, I have so many stories to tell. And about the fact that he had this amazing story about another band member who we were all kind of assuming who it might be, throwing him up against a wall one night, and him saying, if you don't remove those hands, there's a high likelihood you'll never use them again, which I just was, it was just stupid.
The way bravado. He said it was so, yeah, so like boastful, like yeah. I'm tough.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and that's all, it was like he kept on trying to prove that yeah. it was like, you know, he wasn't some kind of, he's edgy, he's not some boy band cutie pie, like he's a tough dude. And it's like, this whole interview was like being egged on by the bigger boys in school and yeah. this revisionist history that he did. And he slagged off Zayn,
yeah.
But did counterbalance it with this load of self-help nonsense that he was doing. At the same time as he was doing this whole, I'm a dude, he was also doing this, hey, everybody, let's just, you know, I'm a fractured mind as well. Yeah. So it was such an odd juxtaposition. The
so
whole interview.
Strange to think of him as the father of Cheryl Cole's baby.
Well, that came up and they were all kind of going, you know, patting him on the back for being a 14-year-old and winking at, you know, Cheryl, and then them ending up together, which I thought was just
weird.
Really bizarre. Yeah. Really bizarre. So, I mean, I think a lot of people, like, it's been headlines everywhere because a lot of people are just like, we didn't realize, I don't think anyone realized how different that man is, or what he actually thought of the band themselves, or
but
the
I would be worried about him, to
I
be
would
honest
too, because
like
he
wasn't he
potential.
Sober at some stage yeah. wasn't he talking about being sober, and then he was drinking whiskey during the interview, and
yeah.
like he does seem a bit, I'm not saying he's like mentally ill or anything, but like he seems like maybe not in the greatest space.
And I think if you're looking at your bandmate, someone like Harry Styles, just going supernova yeah. and going to be in a film as well, starring yeah. in a film, like, and just the life that he's living and the press that he gets about being such an open-minded, like generous kind of good soul,
yeah.
an all-round, you know, cool person, that it probably doesn't do your mental health maybe
well, yeah.
any good.
And also, you know, One Direction did become extremely famous very young.
Mm.
And Harry and Niall appear to have been able to stay
stable,
shockingly grounded, yeah. actually, yeah. in the context of all of that. So, you know, it's not unreasonable that maybe one or two of them would be a little bit damaged by it, or maybe struggling with the aftermath of being that famous and that successful.
Yeah, and having that focus yeah. on you all the time.
I just wish someone would say, do you know what, maybe don't do any interviews for a while.
Or get yourself a pub. I'm sure his publicist is cringing somewhere in the corner. Yeah. Or not, yeah. maybe because they're like, well, it's great press.
Yeah, I mean, he did get a lot of press. Okay, now let's talk about Sarah Jessica Parker, because I would have thought that Samantha chat was over and that Sarah Jessica Parker would not be talking about Kim Cattrall anymore, but apparently that's not true.
Yeah, there's an Access Hollywood podcast that Sarah Jessica Parker did.
I actually love this podcast, it's by the
so
way
good.
Awards Chatter, I listen to it all the time. It's
so
like
good.
Long one-on-one interviews with people who are nominated for awards,
and she is like, to be honest, I like SJP. Yeah. I think she comes across really well. I don't know, she's one of my favorite people that did one of those Vogue
yeah,
questions.
73
I think,
questions
she just
yeah.
gets it, and I think anything she does like that publicity wise she always is very clever, really intelligent way about putting her point across, I think. And but this is a sticking point, like this Kim Cattrall story is just a sticking point. And they did ask her about this very public feud, and she said, it's not a fight, it hasn't been public on my side of things, I didn't bring this into, you know, the press or whatever. And just the fact that she said it's very painful, and it's painful to her that it's called a catfight, because obviously it brings it back to this denigrating women kind
yeah.
of, and the way that there was always this focus on Sex and the City is like, oh, there's all women together, we almost hate each other, that kind of attitude. But I mean, I don't know, I just think, yeah, this is, Kim Cattrall obviously does not want to belong to this show anymore. And that's the be all and end all of this.
Which is fine.
Exactly. And she did her time and she did it amazingly well. She created an iconic character and she did, you know, everything she was supposed to do in that way. But she has said, absolutely not. This is, the book stops here. And the fact that they keep mentioning it, the fact that it was made such a focal point of, and just like that, where they were all teasing fans, teasing the viewers, kind of going, Samantha's text yeah. her, Samantha's made a phone call or whatever, you're kind of giving them false hope.
Yeah.
But I also thought just the way that she was written about in and just like that was kind of cruel, when they were saying that, like, oh, Carrie says about Samantha, oh, I'm not an ATM, I told
yeah.
her. And I was like, that would never happen. And that's
yeah.
not the kind of character that you created.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It's this very close relationship between Michael Patrick King and Sarah Jessica Parker.
Yeah.
The three names that seems to be the root of this, because they're so intermeshed.
Yeah.
They're so involved in those stories that that whatever happened in real life seems to have bled into that fiction, which I find really redundant now at this stage. Just stop.
Yeah, like, they have to move on because there is a season two of And Just Like That coming. And can I say, thank God, I will watch every, minute of it. Every minute of it. But I hope that they just let the Samantha thing go because, like, I, as a diehard fan, I don't want to hear about it anymore. Like, why can't you just go your separate ways? It's fine. We get it. You're not friends. She doesn't want to do the show. That's it. Like, let's just leave it.
But I also think there's a whole part of this where people are like, oh, SJP's public persona is obviously not what she's like in real life. Like, there was a bit, I think her name is Kathy Nimji, who was in
Najimi.
Yeah, who was in Hocus Pocus, and she came out with this tweet after the interview saying, oh, you know, supporting Kim Cattrall, basically saying that, oh, I understand where you're coming from, or, you know, I fully support you. So there is these questions around her attitude, or, you know, why. But she has said, Sarah Jessica Parker said in that interview, she's like, I'm always respectful to people. I'm always, and you do hear about that.
Yeah, I was just going to say, because the vast majority of people who she's worked with are like, she's great.
Yeah.
So I kind of, I don't know, yeah.
I just think that's, there's more questions about that.
Yeah.
Than that interview, you know, and that became the story.
Yeah.
Rather than anything else.
Okay, let's move on. News about True Detective. I kind of thought True Detective was over, but there's going to be another series of it. And I'm very excited about this announcement.
I am. And I might be the only person that actually watched season 3 of True Detective with Mahershala Ali. And it was actually brilliant.
Was it?
He was playing a character who's at two different stages of his life. So he's playing himself in the past and then playing himself suffering from Alzheimer's, the onset of Alzheimer's. And it was such an amazing performance. And I think that was really good. But they've moved away from season 2 was a total blip.
Yeah.
Poor Colin Farrell. He was kind of sold a dud. And if there is ever a cautionary tale about a showrunner who has had too much power, too much control, that is the swift rise and fall of the creator, True Detective, Nick Pizzolatto, because he just drank too much of his own Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
He didn't even have a writer's room. He just had himself. He was all over himself. And it's like megalomania.
No, you always need someone to
tell you
a second opinion. Yeah.
Whoa. So I'm really happy. There's like, it's total reset. Moonlight's Barry Jenkins is involved. He's one of the producers. Wow. And Jodie Bloody Foster is going to be starring in it. I mean, come on, Clarice.
I know, exactly. This is the thing. Like, we know Jodie Foster as an amazing detective.
The best like, there ever was.
It makes total sense to bring her in. And obviously, female-led series sounds fantastic. I am delighted.
It's going to be great. It's going to be called True Detective Night Country, which sounds like a show from 30 Rock, but it actually is better than that. So it's going to take place in the Arctic. And so it's like 24 hours of night and like six men that go missing without a trace. And
oh, she's come on. Don't let us down. I need this to be good.
I think it sounds all good for me. I'm ready for it.
Me too. And then I thought this was interesting. Kate Bush is back in the charts thanks to Stranger Things.
Yes. And you know what? I love this. I mean, I would like to think that we've moved on from that real silly kind of gatekeeper nonsense that a lot of men used to go on with, like, oh, you like this band? Well, yeah, name three albums. Song, yeah. And if kids are discovering, you know, and loving, more importantly, Kate Bush because of Stranger Things, more power to them. Like,
yes, absolutely.
I mean, I first heard the Velvet Underground properly on a Dunlop tire ad in 1993 when I was 11. So, you know, who cares?
Yeah.
Like, if wherever you find music, and hopefully once you love it and become a fan, that's the best thing about it. Like,
I'm pretty sure I came to know Running Up That Hill because the Placebo version was in the OC.
Yes, it was.
Like,
yeah.
I learned, I got to know loads of music through TV.
TV, yeah. And like, I think it was used to particular effect in episode 4 of Stranger Things. I'm not going to spoil it on anybody, but it's Sadie Sink's character, Max. It's her favorite song, and it plays this really pivotal role in the episode. So, and it's now the 8th most streamed song in the world, and it's her first American top 10, her first US top 10. Finally getting its dues 37 years after its first release. And I think that's the greatest thing about it. It's like a new lease of life. And she said that herself. She said she was so excited about this song reaching young fans. Yeah. New fans. And
it seems
so
to me that, like, you know, older music is having just as much of a role in young people. Jeez, I feel like I'm 105. But like, you know, teenagers, say, you know, when you're in that age where you're at peak music discovery, like, you know, because these teens, again, there's no way to talk about this without feeling 90.
Ancient.
Oh God, I'm very cool, okay? But anyway, these youths.
The youths.
I have access to music in a way that we didn't, and that even, you know, people who were in their late 20s didn't, like, when they were teenagers. But these teenagers have access to everything all at once. So, like, all it takes is hearing a song on a TV show, and then you could be off on a Kate Bush binge for weeks. You know what I mean?
I cannot wait for them to listen to, like, that song she had about having sex with a snowman.
Yes, exactly.
Or Babushka or anything at all. Like, but I think, like, people are like, oh, would they not have Googled Kate Bush before? Had they not come across her before? And it's like,
no. How would they?
They have so much going on. There's too much going on. They're oversaturated, overstimulated, and it takes that little bit of curation.
Well, this is the thing. And, like, that's I think, where, now I'm off on a tangent now, but I think that's obviously having worked in music and having done a new music show for years in radio. Like, I think the thing that some radio stations are missing is that curation is the difference between an algorithm and radio, or, you know, another way of bringing people music. Like, you know, the actual careful selection by a human being of songs for particular moments, as happens in TV, like, that brings people to music in a really powerful way. And, like, traditional media needs to kind of look at that, I think, radio in particular, and think about its relationship with its listeners.
Exactly.
Because the old kind of formulas, I just don't think are going to work anymore, where you just throw on the brand new songs and everybody's happy, because that's not how anyone's engaging with music
anymore. It isn't.
Anymore.
It's more personal, and it feels more personal when it's used in such a way that it has your full attention.
Exactly.
You're like, that's what you need. That's what we want more of, in a way. And I just think it's great that they're on this lovely, weird journey. Yeah. And we always give out about things going viral, like bad things happening because stuff goes viral. But this is one of the positives.
Oh, it's
and
great.
I love it for her.
I totally agree. And very quickly, we've got two more TV. Oh my God, my brain is not working. Two more TV stories. And we will start with Love Island has launched. Yeah. There is an Irish contestant from the beginning, which everybody's very excited about. I haven't actually seen it yet. So how's it going?
He has a love heart shaped birthmark on his peen. That's what we know about Dami Hope.
Wow, Dami.
He said it. He came out with that. That's like one of the second thing he nearly said.
Worth saying, by the way, we're recording this on Tuesday and this week because of a scheduling conflict in my life. So potentially we've learned more.
So by now,
maybe he has more birthmarks.
By now we could have seen it. We don't know. Like, that's
how
for,
does
like,
he
late
seem
night.
Though? Is he coming across well? I really want him to do well.
He's very cool. He's very removed. He's observing everything, I think, from, like, just from the sidelines for the moment. So we'll see.
I think it often goes well for the guys or the people in Love Island who are like that, though. Some of them like bound in like a Labrador puppy, and they're like,
I'm on camera, look at me. Like,
but it's much more natural to me to go in and be a little bit cautious and kind of like take your time.
Yeah. Well, like, the thing about it is for me now this year, we'll never talk about being old again. Oh my God, there's such a concentration on youth. It's like Gemma, who is Michael Owen's daughter, is 19, and she was, which
looking
was weird because it's like, come on girl, you're 19 years old, you're an absolute stoner, you could find love anywhere.
Shop,
like,
around.
Exactly, live your life, have a good time, girl. And then she was like, oh, my last full-time relationship, long-term relationship was like 1.5 years ago. And I was like, what? So we're 17. That's okay, fine, whatever. And then the other girls were like, 24 is old. And I could feel my bones turn into dust. I felt like the Elwyn from Titanic. I was like, I had youth. What is happening? Then somebody saying, oh, at 27, you should start settling down. And I was like, I can't. I want a Love Island where it's like people from 25 to 35 at least.
Please.
And the stakes are higher.
Give me
the stakes
people
are real.
With baggage.
Yes, exactly.
Imagine
and
how much more
problems.
Yes, imagine how much more interesting the conversations would be if you had people with history and baggage and, like, you know,
have been through a few things and felt a few things and feel a type of way.
Yeah,
like, and that's what I really want. And I love it. Don't get me wrong, because I love
it. Should be like Love Island : grown-ups.
Exactly. That's what we need. We do, because I can't keep on listening to somebody say that, like, they're all past it at 24. And
I mean, I'll still probably watch.
Oh, I will watch it, because it's the weird rituals of the mating game in microcosm. Yeah. And I want to see someone try and spell out something in avocado toast again. And that's always worth watching.
What more could we ask for? And then before I let you go, Jen, you predicted, you are the Mystic Meg of television.
I am. Just for Neighbours. It's Neighbours-centric. I said Guy Pearce. We wanted Mike to come back, and Mike is back. Guy Pearce is back in Neighbours on his motorbike. Now, they've upgraded it. I think he has a Harley now. Oh. Very exciting. But he's been taking pictures from set, and it's the cutest thing. If you have, like, his Twitter or his Instagram, you have to go look at it. Him and Harold. It's just a tear. I was nearly crying because it's so... It's like all of those memories. Jane is back. I think Craig McLaughlin is back. Like all the OGs from when it was at the height, at the peak of its powers.
And when are we going to... Are these episodes on our... What's the story with Neighbours now?
It's going to be like... Well, Neighbours is done. It will be... It's wrapping up this summertime. So I'm assuming this will be like the final kind of shows in August maybe.
And is it still on RTV?
It will be on BBC. So okay. I'm sure what they'll do is they'll do their normal wrap up of it on the BBC because it's shown at lunchtime on the BBC. But what they'll do is for this, they'll put it on in the evening. They have to. They'll do a big extravaganza saying goodbye to Neighbours. They have to. Kylie is involved, so we need to see this.
Something to look forward to.
Exactly.
Jen Gannon, thank you so much for bringing us your brilliance.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. You too.
Well, that's nearly it from the pod this week. But before I go, I have a few recommendations. By the way, how do we feel about pod? I don't know. It's not something I ever said before I had a podcast. And now I'm saying pod left, right and center. Do you know what? I don't even know why I asked because I won't be able to stop myself. I just know I won't. So we might as well carry on. Anyway, I have a few recommendations before I go. Number one, I mentioned this a few episodes ago. I said I was going to watch it. I hadn't watched it yet, but I'd heard good things. That is Life and Beth, which is on Disney Plus. And I have been watching it and it is excellent. This is Amy Schumer's new series. It is about a woman in her life, as are almost every program and book and everything that I enjoy generally is about a woman in her life. But it's very funny, but also quite moving. And I would recommend. Also on Disney Plus, Disney Plus is like really coming through for me at the moment. There's loads of shows I'm watching there. Is Abbott Elementary, which I had been reading about loads because it was a huge success, its first series in America. It is basically kind of a mockumentary style show set in a primary school in America. So kind of like The Office style. And yeah, it's just very good fun. The episodes are less than half an hour long, so it's easily digestible. The performances are good. I'm always looking for those kind of lighter things. And if you are looking for one, I think that's one that you might enjoy. Then I want to recommend a podcast. After the Tone is the podcast. This is my friend Scotty's podcast. Scotty is an incredible artist and performer and theater maker and writer. And Scotty does just loads of brilliant things. But because Scotty is my friend, I'll be honest, I put off listening to the podcast for a really long time. Sometimes I find that I put off reading or listening to or digesting my friend's work because I'm afraid that I won't like it. I don't know if that made sense, but like if my friend does something and then I listen to it and I don't really like it, I'll feel really bad about the fact that I don't like it. And then I'll like agonize with myself about what I'll say to them. And, you know, and I have a lot of creative friends and I always want to love what they're doing. Anyway, I should not have worried about this. And I listened to one episode and I was absolutely hooked. Went back to the start, listened to them all. I think they're on their fourth series of the podcast now. It's a very simple setup. Basically, people ring in, leave a message for Scotty. Scotty reacts to them in real time and gives responses. And it's such a mixed bag. So you get really moving messages from people who are looking for advice. You get funny observations from life. You get just everything you could possibly think of. And what's really nice about it, one of my favorite things about it, is that you get a lot of repeat callers. So you kind of get to know the people. And it really feels like a community is building of people who listen and contribute to the podcast. And Scotty is just such a brilliant host. Sometimes he is giving really thoughtful, beautiful advice. Really considered and heartfelt. And other times he's just ripping people to shreds. And I, for one, really enjoy that. Here's an example of him ripping people to shreds.
Now, I know I have some controversial opinions and I think this one might get me cancelled, but I've got to get it off my chest. I think people who wear slippers are deeply unattractive. There you go. I said it. I do, honestly. I'm going to go as far as saying... ugly people wear slippers. It's true. Listen, before you get yourself all hyped, let me give you some justifications. A, slippers are essentially old-fashioned Crocs, okay? And side note, Crocs are also fucking vile. B, people who wear slippers somehow think that they don't have to wash them, so they, like, mope about the house with these, like, crusty, dirty things on the end of their feet. No, thank you. C, in which world are you that cold that a sock doesn't suffice? Honestly, if you're living in a place where it's that cold, put on a pair of shoes, put on a pair of snow boots, babe. But a pair of slippers, no thank you.
Tone, after the tone, leave your message after the tone.
So that podcast, as I said, is called After the Tone. I highly, highly recommend it. And it has literally nothing to do with the fact that Scotty is my friend. It's just brilliant. Anyway, time for me to go. But thank you so much again for being with me this week. I will be back with a new episode of Catch Up next Friday. In the meantime, I would be so grateful if you would rate, review, subscribe, whatever you're having yourself. And maybe if you like the podcast, you might even tell a friend. That would be hugely helpful to me. And I'm still, again, so grateful to everyone who's listening and really appreciate the people who take the time to send me a message to tell me how they feel about the podcast or give me feedback on individual segments or just say that they're enjoying it, because it means so much to me. And I don't think that will ever stop. In the meantime, I hope you have a great week. As I always say, if you can't have a great week, that's okay too. Just take care of yourself as much as you possibly can within whatever your current set of circumstances are. And I will talk to you next Friday.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.